You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up, the dangers of lead in drinking water are a topic of national conversation after the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. We'll learn about a new grant program for the state's Department of Natural Resources aimed at helping low-income areas replace lead pipes that bring water into homes. First, there's been a lot of talk during presidential debates about American jobs going overseas and college becoming too unaffordable. Our next guest says the problem isn't that there aren't enough jobs here, it's that America's employees aren't being trained or prepared to fill some of the vacant jobs. And a lot of those jobs are middle-skill jobs that require vocational training, not a four-year degree. Joining us now is Catherine Newman. She's provost and senior vice chancellor for academic affairs at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's co-author of the new book, Reskilling America, Learning to Labor in the 21st Century. Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, part of the core problem, Catherine, you're saying is we've got jobs out there. We've got businesses that want to create more jobs. We don't have the skilled workforce to meet those needs. How big a problem is this?
It's a pretty big problem. In manufacturing alone, there are some 600,000 jobs that have not been filled for lack of people who have the right skills. And we have a workforce that is aging, and when they retire, we're going to have even fewer people stepping up behind them. So we need people in mechatronics, in advanced manufacturing, in information technology. There's a long list of career areas that pay well and that require education, both training and education in high school and beyond, especially in community colleges, of the kind that our European counterparts are investing in very heavily, but we are not, and we need to if we're going to remain a competitive country.
Yeah, part of the case you're making is that we've set an educational priority on getting as many kids to four-year college as possible, and you say at the expense of that kind of vocational training. What's led to that philosophy?
Well, I think that there has been a long-standing skepticism, or maybe I should say an episodic skepticism, about vocational training. In part, it's part of the long debate that goes all the way back to W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, who argued vociferously about whether training for pragmatic economic opportunity was more important or less important than training for liberal arts education. Both are important. Both are important pathways. And the great genius of American higher education is that it offers choice to people, and choices that don't necessarily slam the doors in people's faces as they consider alternatives as they move through the lifespan. So I think, however, this collided with a post-World War II romance with white-collar employment, which tended to lead through the gates of universities. Universities do very important work to educate our population, to create good citizens, and to prepare people for certain parts of the labor market. But the technical training I'm talking about in Reskilling America is absolutely critical if we're going to be at the top of manufacturing or IT or any of the new emerging areas, and that isn't necessarily what four-year universities can do. So we need both, not either or.
Part of that skepticism you mentioned, and you talk about this some in your book, is maybe a fear that, okay, we're taking people at a fairly young age, high school age, maybe even younger, and saying, you're college bound, you're white collar job bound, you guys over here and girls over here, you are bound for blue collar jobs. And people don't want to have that intentional class sorting, I guess, in our educational system.
It's true that this is where a lot of the skepticism comes from. But if we really look at what happens, especially to young people who are coming out of high schools that don't prepare them very well for your college education, what actually happens to them when they seek that pathway is that they end up often deeply mired in debt. They don't complete their education. It doesn't leave them with the kinds of skills that are necessary for them to earn a good living. And very often they're coming out of communities that desperately need people, especially young men, to have good job prospects so they can support themselves and their families. We don't give them that alternative. We give them only one alternative. And the statistics on their success rates can be very troubling. So I am not advocating that we shut the door to college education. No one in my position would. But I do think we need to open up alternatives so that these possibilities that are going begging can be filled by people who need good jobs with a good future.
Talking to Catherine Newman. She's co-author of the new book, Reskilling America, Learning to Labor in the 21st Century. I want to look at some real-world examples. I mean, Germany is famous for vocational training, but you say we don't need to cross the Atlantic. Talk about the New York Aviation High School as an example of what you're talking about.
Aviation High School was founded in 1936. It was very much a child of the New Deal, and it has been absolutely instrumental in creating a skilled labor force for the aircraft industry and for the airline industry. It's trained countless pilots, technicians, people who have been very successful contributors to the major airlines. And it's been doing that, again, since 1936. The teachers who are there today, many of them are veterans of the military and of the aviation industry, and they come back to teach in the high school because they really love the place. The students, there are thousands of students who try to get into this school. It's a regular public school, and they very often commute for an hour and a half on the subway just to be able to gain access to this education. They have regular Regents diplomas, but they also train for the airline and aircraft industry, and they can come out with a certificate, which if they had to purchase this on the open market, purchase this training, it would cost them $30,000 or $40,000. So it's a very successful school, very highly motivated students, very motivated teachers, but as is true of many vocational programs, is working with out-of-date equipment, with an inability often to place students in the kind of internships they need to get real-world experience. So they're really hobbled by lack of investment, but no lack of enthusiasm or talent.
I want to bring things home to Wisconsin. You spend a little time on Wisconsin in your book. On the one hand, critiquing the state for budget cuts to some of the smaller schools, technical colleges, smaller UW system colleges that could do this kind of thing. But also, you see positive examples in an apprenticeship program in the state. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes, Wisconsin has been one of the pioneers, along with some of the surprising states in the Southeast that have also been pioneers, where they've recognized, at least periodically, that apprenticeship was very important, that this kind of technical training in regional settings was important. So Wisconsin has been one of the states out there in front of this wave. But even in Wisconsin, the support has not been steady enough. And this is part of the problem we see. There, we have periods of excitement about this model and then periods in which it just dies off. I've been interviewed by other radio stations where people have said to me, couldn't we have had this interview in 1993? And the answer is yes, we could have, because that was an earlier period in which we fell in love with this idea. So we don't just need to invest in it. We need to do this in a way that is consistent, consistent in all the states, consistent in the federal government, and not just discovered when we're in the middle of a recession and high unemployment. If it isn't consistent, then the training is not of sufficient quality, and people can't depend on it.
Catherine, suppose November comes, we have a president-elect, they call you and say, Catherine, we like this idea of yours. What are the key steps to making an effective vocational education system in this country? What has to be included?
What has to be included is robust budgets for vocational education, which costs money in terms of technology, and we also need to reward teachers for investing in their own skills in these areas. We need to enable them to work in those industries in the summertime and come back to the academic year with the kinds of experience and state-of-the-art understanding of new technologies, as well as connections they can then give to their talented students to help them get jobs. We need to partner vocational and technical education with apprenticeship. These aren't the same thing, and they really work best when they're melded together. So during the school day, you have all of the academic side, the sort of basics in math and physics and human communication skills, but the job skills that you get from working on the shop floor as an apprentice are a critical part of this. And so we do have some schools in the U.S., including here in Massachusetts, where students work for a week with employers, and then they come back to school for a week. That kind of sandwich model can work. There are other models, especially in places like South Carolina, where the students in four or five feeder high schools come to a central technical training college in the afternoon. So they're in their regular high schools in the morning and in the technical college in the afternoon and have a sort of a split schedule, if you will. That model works too. There are many different models, but I think the most important thing, the lesson we learned from looking at Germany, for example, is it's the combination of steady, high quality, and demanding vocational and technical education with real world experience through apprenticeship.
We're talking to Catherine Newman. She's co-author of the new book, Reskilling America, Learning to Labor in the 21st Century. She says there's a high demand for middle school vocationally trained workers, but a low supply of those workers in the United States. She wants to see more vocational education, as she was just saying, a consistent, well-funded program that includes apprenticeships. Now we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more focus on technical education, on vocational education, on apprenticeships? Or do you think college for all or as many kids as possible is the best way to bridge inequalities in the country? Have you participated in some kind of vocational education program as a student, as a teacher, or in an apprenticeship program? Are there apprentices at your workplace here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Catherine Newman is with us. She's Provost and Senior Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Her new book is Reskilling America, Learning to Labor in the 21st Century, talking about America's education system and workforce, a mismatch between the manufacturing jobs, high-skilled manufacturing jobs available, and the skills of workers. Join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more vocational education at American schools, high schools, technical colleges, colleges? Have you participated in something like this as a student, as a teacher, or do you wish you could have? If you're at a business that works with apprentices, maybe in conjunction with a high school or a technical college, love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Catherine, before we get to our callers, wanted to ask about how do we know what the needs are going to be in the future. I worry that, you know, at some point in American history, there could have been a horse and buggy vocational program or a computer punch card vocational program where students learn skills that become obsolete. How do we know we're on top of the times?
Your point is well taken, and this is why I think it's so important to involve industry in advising schools and to enable teachers to move back and forth between the world of work and the world of education. We tend to keep those things fairly hermetically sealed from one another, but that's not true everywhere in the world. We see in Japan a lot more coordination between teachers and industry. And by the way, I don't just mean manufacturing. There are many other kinds of industry and both for-profit and non-profit opportunities out there than just manufacturing. But I do think we need a teacher labor force that's kept well informed about how new technologies are moving forward. And we also, one of the reasons we need apprenticeship so much isn't just for the contacts that it gives young people, but firms are in a very powerful position to introduce them to the most recent technologies. They don't stay in business if they're behind the curve. So we can't really expect schools to be continuously investing in new equipment. They really aren't financially enabled to do that, but firms are. They have to. And that's why we need young people to have an opportunity to work on the shop floor so they are continuously being trained in new technologies. And that's about as much sort of forecasting as we're really able to do, but it's certainly true that we need to be on the lookout for the ways in which the world is changing economically and in terms of new forms of production and try to stay on top of those curves and invent new ones ourselves.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234 with Joe on the line here in Wisconsin. Joe, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, I'm a former university instructor, became redundant, and I decided to take advantage of my state of Ohio Workforce Investment Act funds, and I became a truck driver. And I'm rolling through your fine state right now. But I want to know, what do we do to address the, I call it irresponsible recruiting of these universities? I heard you mention before, you know, they're getting in debt, they're not graduating, they don't have a skill set. How do we address that gross mass out of control recruiting, which, you know, come to college, your future. How do we address that? Because I think that's a big part of the problem.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Catherine, I'm assuming given your job at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, you have a perspective on that. What do you think?
I certainly do. Well, we do, of course, encourage students to come our way, and they are extremely well qualified. It's a highly competitive university to get into, and I'm very proud of the work that our students do, but we're not involved in uncontrolled growth. I think we do owe it to students, all of us do as a society, to provide them with clear options and an understanding of where those options lead. The biggest problems in higher education are not really with the nonprofits or the University of Wisconsin. They're with the for-profits that do heavily recruit and are often very misleading in what they tell students they will be able to do with those credentials, and they do indebt them up to their eyeballs. So the biggest student debt problems are not in the conventional colleges and universities we all know about. They're in the for-profit industry that has worked very hard to capture federal dollars for their students. They, too, can do a good job on occasion, but we have a lot more fly-by-night for-profits than we ought to have. So I think our biggest problems can be controlled in that respect by truth in advertising in the for-profit sector.
Thanks a lot for that call, Joe. We'll go next to Jamie on the line in Milwaukee. Jamie, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm interested in the phrase comes to me on-the-job training, which is something, I'm 67, I heard that when I was younger. It's not an apprenticeship, it's not a vocational school, it's someone entering a company at an entry-level position and getting training within that company on the site. And I wonder, does that even exist anymore, or are those companies depending on the apprenticeships and the vocational schools to do that?
Jamie, thanks a lot for that call. So, Catherine, should companies be doing this for themselves, not putting this on the school system?
Well, it would be helpful if companies were more supportive of what the school system is trying to do and to invest in apprenticeship. In the European model, companies pay apprentices. So the training on the school side might be provided by the state supporting schools, but apprentices are usually paid for by companies who often turn around and ask community colleges, technical colleges to help with the training process. This is particularly important if you are a small business owner, because providing robust training when you're just a tiny company can be very, very difficult financially. But if you can work together with other employers in a career program or technical training program that's regional, you can take advantage of that economy of scale. All companies do on-the-job training. Truthfully, there's only so much that any school or even training program can do to provide the tailored skills that someone needs when they're working for us on a very specific piece of equipment or with a company that has a specific kind of computer program or something of that sort. But apprenticeship is really something in the middle. It does expose people to training that's provided by the firm, because the apprentices are in the firm learning from more skilled, advanced, and seasoned workers. And that's who the teachers are. And this is very well developed in Germany, where young people starting at the age of 16 or 17 will start one of these dual vocational programs. And in the first year, they spend most of the week in school and only some of the week in the companies that are apprenticing them. But as they move into the second year, it flips over and they're spending most of the week in the company and only some of it in school. But when they're on the shop floor, they have what's called a Meister or master teacher. That person is usually somebody who's put in 20 years on the shop floor. So that's a worker who has a lot of educational, a lot of applied experience, and they are transmitting it to a cohort of young people who've come in to work with them or train with them. That's really the model that I think is the best.
Jamie, thanks for that call. We're talking to Catherine Newman. Her new book is Reskilling America, Learning to Labor in the 21st Century. Talk about vocational education. We'll go next to Kurt on the line in Chippewa Falls. Kurt, hi.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. The guest, Catherine, is making excellent points, and she just touched on part of the problem and solution when she referred again to the German system, but she has to go the rest of the way. The problem is not only training for student and skilled workers. We had that until it was piece by piece, taken apart by corporations that just dropped. The culture in Germany is that workers, skilled workers, are highly honored, have been for centuries. Here, the corporate sector treats workers as dispensable resources. When they change their plans, the workers become irrelevant.
Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. I want to get Catherine Newman in before we're out of time. Part of this is culture. We need to, he's saying, respect skilled workers more.
I totally agree with him. And in fact, they are very skilled and they are very respected in countries like Germany. And in fact, the wage gap between skilled blue-collar and skilled white-collar work is very narrow in Germany because all of these people are regarded as important and respected. And I do think that that would go a long way both to destigmatize vocational education and to increase our intake of young people if they felt that that was a respected alternative.
Thanks a lot for that call. Catherine, in our last just under a minute, are people listening? Do you think people want to take this message and run with it and boost our vocational education?
I do think they're listening. Of course, they've listened before, and we've had this episodic pattern of interest, and then it disappears or wanes. I do think they're listening in part because I think the recession of 2008 was so powerful and had such a negative impact on millions of young people, especially in inner-city communities, but really all over the country. And we have the continuing spectacle of declining work opportunities for blue-collar workers. And I think we've all come to recognize that college for all, well, is fine for many, many people, will not do the trick for the whole country, and that we need to look in other directions if we're really going to recover the kind of robust employment and economic vitality for the future.
Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Catherine Newman from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's co-author of the new book, Reskilling America, Learning to Labor in the 21st Century. You can keep sharing your thoughts on vocational education, maybe your experiences with vocational education. Just head over and share them at the Central Time Facebook page.